Hello and welcome to PFF Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm your host, Ian Harditz, and I hope everybody had an absolutely lovely week 13 because the fantasy football playoffs are right around the corner. And as always, here on the PFF Fantasy Football Podcast, we will keep you prepared each and every step along the way. Goal of this episode tonight is to recap everything that just happened from all these afternoon games, all 11 of them. And as always, I'm joined by none other than PFF senior analyst Dwayne McFarland to break down all the action. Dwayne, how's your Sunday?
Good, man. That late slate like got really good at the end. Like, that was exciting watching the Pittsburgh Ravens ending, and then as well as the 49ers and the Seahawks. Ended up being some decent games today, even though like everything looked like it was going to be lopsided early.
It was a bad 1 p.m. slate in terms of close games for the most part, other than, you know, the Lions shocking the world, getting that W. So good for them. At least we had some points being scored, though. But yes, I agree. 4 p.m. company, more than good. But enough small talk, Dwayne. Let's get into everything here. Starting off, and as always, as we go through this, I'm going to kind of go through some things that stuck out to me from watching the games, both good and sheesh worthy, go through some injuries as they've arisen, maybe give a cool PFF Lily stat or two, and then throw it on over to Dwayne for his award winning context matters utilization metric. So without further ado, let's get after it. Chargers took down the Bengals 41-22, covering as a 2.5 point dog, the over cash with ease at 50. Great to see Justin Herbert thrown deep again. Oh, and look, the Chargers put up 40 points in the offense. Looks great. Funny how that works. Immediately, you could tell that Herbert was having, you know, this new kind of, not New York state of mind, good song, but he was playing in Cincinnati, a Cincinnati state of mind, if you will. Hit Mike Williams for two bombs early and then threw a long touchdown to Jalen Guyton, who just was able to outjump the defender. These weren't like awesome throws by Justin Herbert by any stretch. I mean, I would agree with the notion that Joe Burrow actually had the better game, all things considered. But hey, when Herbert throws deep, he has guys like Mike Williams, Keenan, Guyton, Josh Palmer. He has all these guys that can go up and make great plays, not to even mention their big body tight ends. Obviously, we'd like to see that continue to happen, not without its fair worth of sheeshes, though, because we had in this one, Jalen Guyton almost have a second touchdown, got ruled just short of the goal line. We also had Donald Parham get open near the goal line. He was a better ball touchdown away from a short score. And Josh Palmer got open deep on a third and forever. Would have needed to be an amazing throw from Herbert, but you could imagine. Either way, Justin Herbert, 317 through the air, three scores, two of which went to Keenan inside the 20-yard line. Another good game from Herbert. And hey, we haven't seen many of these games over the past 6 weeks. So good to see for this now 7-5 Chargers team. Over with Joe Burrow, though, man, early on, like, he was in a zone, it seemed like. But the problem was Ja'Marr Chase maybe thought it was a college ball, whatever it was, but he had one of the worst drops of the day. Could have, should have, would have been a 50-plus yard house call. Unfortunately, it just went right off his hands. But that didn't stop Burrow from at least competing for a little bit. He found his way into the end zone as a rusher, threw a dime down the middle to T. Higgins for another touchdown, had a nice one down the sideline to Boyd. And this was mostly happening after he suffered a nasty dislocated pinky on his throwing hand. It looked like it might take him out of the game for a little bit. He was grimacing on the sideline and all that. He did come back right in, though, and it really didn't seem to impact him for the worse. Again, it was more so his receivers that were screwing him on the week. Only Zach Wilson was charged with more total drops than Burrow had to deal with. So Joe Mixon did find his way into the end zone. Unfortunately, had a back-breaking fumble that the Chargers really took back the other way to really seal things off. Austin Eckler put the ball on the ground twice, too. Yeah, a lot to go on in this one. Final note is just some of these injuries. Again, mentioned Joe Burrow with the dislocated throwing pinky, badly swollen, but it didn't seem to impact his throwing. Mixon suffered a neck injury, but he did come back into the game. He handled his usual load. T. Higgins briefly had an ankle injury, got horse collar to look bad. He came back into the game. Austin Eckler seemingly limped off at the end of the game, although I didn't see anything in the follow-up press conferences to make us believe that's serious. And finally, Joey Bosa left in the first half with a head injury. So quickly, before I throw it over to you, Dwayne, just want to again stress how great that Herbert deep ball was and how much it had been missing, because in five games since the Chargers week 7 bye, weeks 8 through 12, Herbert was just 6-for-11 throwing deep for 185 yards and two scores. In week 13 alone, he was 5-for-7 throwing at least 20 yards downfield, 188 yards with a touchdown. So that was great to see. And Dwayne, it was also great to see Mike Williams' targets get back up there, because for so much of this kind of second half of the season so far, it's really been Keenan Allen, the undisputed number one, Mike Williams, the number two, much more of a 1A, 1B today.
Yeah. I mean, I thought we were going to have a huge game from Williams, because it was like in the first, like, two or three drives. Like, he was already at four catches. He ended up at five for 110, but he did have seven targets. You had eight targets to Keenan Allen. So, yeah, it was more of a 1A, 1B. 24% target share to Keenan today, 21% to Mike Williams. Williams still with the deep A dot, 14.4 and a 10.1 to Keenan Allen. Nothing really, you know, standing out to me on the Charger side as far as anything different, right, to really point out to folks. But over on the Bengals side, you know, we did get another huge week out of T. Higgins, 14 targets, 9 receptions, 138 yards, 1 touchdown. Looking at, you know, these last couple of weeks, like, we talked about Higgins really for probably the last, what, 6 weeks, saying that this was really coming.
It's been a minute.
And so, I mean, we're just seeing it come to fruition, you know, 3.07 yards per route run today. And what's interesting is Jamar Chase is actually, like, they're kind of using them more interchangeably. Like, T. Higgins is the guy working down the field more over the last couple of games. Again, his A dot today was 13.7 versus Jamar Chase at 8. So they're actually using these players, you know, interchangeably all over the field, which is more like what we used to see with the Rams offense, you know, back in the day when Zach Taylor was there. So that makes sense to us. But T. Higgins, I think everybody, you know, we've already been calling him a low end wide receiver too, you know, really the rest of the way. Well, they should feel really confident in that after today, after another huge game. Joe Mixon, you know, we had talked about this a couple times. You know, he's been doing really well. He's living on the touchdowns. You know, he's been scoring two a game. He did come through for you with a touchdown today on the ground, 19 carries, 54 yards. He did have a fumble as well. So there was a little bit more Samaje Perine, though, because of the game script. You know, the Bengals got down early in this game. And so 100% of the long down and distance went to Samaje Perine, 0% to Joe Mixon, 33% of the two-minute offense to Joe Mixon, 67% of the two-minute offense to Samaje Perine. So we've talked about Mixon before and saying, like, look, it's just at the point where he's on a good offense. You know, things are clicking. You're not going to obviously bench him. You know, he's been a sell high for me, and this was the worry. But, I mean, look, he's still, you know, a mid-range RB1. You know, he's going to get all the carries inside the five on a good offense. So it's nothing where you got to freak out. But just know that he can get scripted out of these games a little bit. If he hadn't have come through with the touchdown today, we would have been really upset, because it would have been 5.4 points on the ground minus the fumble. He only had one target and zero receptions today. So that's just the thing you got to watch out for with Mixon.
And you said it on Higgins and Chase being largely interchangeable in recent weeks. And it's really been that way all year when they've been playing together. 10 games with both of them active. Higgins, 81 targets. Chase, 73. Nobody else is over that middle range in the 50s. So keep an eye on that Higgins injury. Dwayne, I know, as you've mentioned throughout the year, we don't get these games where all three of them ball out. But God forbid something does happen to Higgins or Chase, that's when Tyler Boyd can really get back into business. Mentioned it in the intro, but the Lions took down the Vikings 29-27, covering as a 7-point dog, the over cash at 47.5. Last, there was 4 seconds left. Goff dropped back, and for whatever freaking reason, the Vikings did not defend the goal line. They decided to defend 3 yards into the end zone, setting up the game-winning touchdown for Amon-Ra St. Brown. It was a great game for the rookie, 10 catches and 86 yards in addition to that score. But how about Jared Goff, man? He actually made a good 4 or 5 throws that had the PFF office, like, not ironically, like, cheering for the guy. Like, usually it's just kind of joking about Stafford looking like Goff and this or that, like, slander that, you know, guys just will do when you're watching football. But today, man, just down the seam time and time again. He got a touchdown to Hawkinson. He had a big game before that. He threw another touchdown down the seam to Brock Wright, because of course you got to keep Brock Wright involved in the game plan. But it was really far more good than bad from Goff, which is tough to say, you know, on the 2021 season. So overall, Jared Goff's first win without Sean McVay as his head coach. Credit to you, Jared Goff, got that monkey off your back. And, you know, pretty much good things, though, from the guys that we hope for in Detroit. Hawkinson, 49 yards, also caught that touchdown. Jamal Williams, he only had 80 total yards, but it was on 18 touches. We saw Jamar Jefferson, you know, only a little bit as involved, with him only getting 5 touches, and Goblin was pretty far reduced. So, hey, it was a game where, no, Jamal didn't find the end zone. He didn't completely blow up, but the usage was what we were expecting. As long as Swift remains out, we're going to continue to fire up Jamal as a mid-tier to upside RB2 in Fantasyland. And then the Vikings side of things, I mean, look at Madison. He had a similar workload, a little bit more enhanced. He did find the end zone. He did go for 124, just continuing to prove that basically when Dalvin Cook is out, you know, if you just want to pretend that's now Alexander Mattison and not adjust anything else, you're going to be in a pretty good spot, because that is what Mattison has given to us without Cook in the lineup. Also, Kirk Cousins, this really wasn't on him. I mean, on our PFF show, Eric actually predicted the Lions were going to win this one outright. So credit to, you know, PFF's resident PhD mathematician for calling that one out. I guess we should maybe listen to what he has to say from time to time. But the thesis behind it was like that Kirk Cousins was going to have one of these bad Kirk Cousins games. Wasn't exactly the case. 340 yards, two touchdowns, despite not really having Adam Thielen for the overwhelming majority of this game. He did leave early with an ankle injury, and that allowed Justin Jefferson to get 14 targets. He caught 11 of them for 182 yards and a touchdown. Also, Kirk had a nice touchdown to KJ Osborne down the middle, showing off the rocket on more than a few occasions, and did enough to win in this one. I mean, if you're going to give up 29 points to the Lions, you deserve to lose. More weeks than not. And for Kirk to only have one turnover on a fumble, I don't think he played nearly bad enough to lose, although I'm sure he'll get most of the, you know, slander from mainstream media and all that. Only a real sheesh from this one. Tyler Conklin, who had a big game, 7 catches for 56 yards, could have been even bigger. He mossed a dude in the end zone, came down. They originally ruled it a touchdown. Upon further review, his second foot was just out of bounds. So good game from Conklin. And Dwayne, like, if we're going to see Thielen miss time for a little while, first of all, it's going to be tough to keep Jefferson out of like our top three, hell, our top one receivers. Okay, it's Cooper Kupp, but top three, top five, whatever. You know what I mean? Conklin's going to help. And maybe, just maybe, you know, someone like KJ Osborne can also begin to give us a little bit of fantasy value.
Yeah, man. Looking at it today, you know, with Conklin, he was actually out there for 79% of the routes, 22% of the targets. You know, which is the highest he's had in several weeks. He's had a couple of games where he's been around the 20% mark. So I do think that he's a low end tight end one, you know, in any week that we don't have, you know, Adam Thielen out there, because we know that the Vikings don't always want to run 11 personnel. They're willing to run 12. They're willing to run 21. KJ Osborne did see his route spike though up to 94%. So he did play outside, and Dede Westbrook got on the field to play in the slot 60% of the routes. Osborne was, you know, kind of involved as well, 17% of the targets, working mostly, you know, underneath a dot of 7.4. Conklin was a 5. And then you got really Justin Jefferson working down the field at a 13.6. So, yeah, I think, you know, whenever you look at, you know, Conklin, low end tight end one, you look at Osborne, it's going to be more like a, not something I think we're really going to want to, you know, trust Ian, but, you know, he could be a low end wide receiver 3. I would think of him as a wide receiver 4 though. And just depending on matchup and what else you have going on in your lineup, you know, if we do see that, you know, Thielen is going to miss time, which, like you said, he was knocked out. Like, it might've been like after the second or third drive that Thielen was knocked out of this game. Really, he's only out there for 9% of the routes and 8% of the snaps today. And then on, from an Alexander Mattison standpoint, yeah, he got everything we expected. 86% of the snaps, 66% of the routes, 83% of the rushing attempts, 100% short down and distance, 58% of the long down and distance, and 100% of the 2-minute offense. Like, that's what you want to see from an every down back, and you got it today from Mattison. I know we thought he might smash, you know, even a little bit more than what he did, you know, with it being the Lions, but hey, that's what really good backs that are on the field all the time do. Even though you may not have the greatest game ever, he still came through, scored you a touchdown. He was active in the passing game too, 3 targets, 3 receptions, 34 yards. Only a 7% target share, but 10% targets per route run. We did see Kenny Nwangu. Am I saying this right, Ian?
You're asking the wrong guy, Dwayne.
I was trying to look it up before the show, and I was like, damn it, I'm not going to get to it in time. And I'm going to have another one when I get to the Lions. Nwangu. Anyway,
we'll roll with that.
We'll roll with that. That's a tongue twister, even if you know how to say it. 60% targets per route run. So he was out there a little bit, but not really enough. More really special team stuff. But on the Lions side of the ball, Jamal Williams, what was interesting, he did lead the team in the rushing attempt, 65%, but he didn't have the every down role that we thought he was going to have. He's only played 47% of the snaps, only in a route 24%. So really, Jamal Williams, you think back to his time with the Packers, what do you think of? all that time that he blocked Aaron Jones from a passing down roll. Well, now he gets over to the Lions and you have DeAndre Swift out. And it's like, no, Jamal Williams, just kidding. You're just going to continue to be really the early down back. I mean, obviously he took over the carries that DeAndre Swift left behind as well. So it wasn't just a game script thing. But I don't know how much we know that for sure, Ian, because this was a game where the Lions managed to keep it pretty close, stayed in there. So it wasn't like their normal situation where they're just getting blown out, right, immediately. So when you look at Jamal Williams, 60% of the short down and distance, but only 33% of long down and distance, 0% of the two-minute offense. That went to Igwebuike. Anyway, I'm actually embarrassed like right now. So
this simulation we're living in is getting tough with some of these things.
Yeah, I'll just go with Godwin.
there we go.
You know, it's I'll work on these folks, but didn't have time to get to them all today. I did hear his name actually get pronounced in the game, but I forgot how the guy pronounced it. So he was actually out there, though, for Godwin was out there for 100% of the two-minute offense. 56%. Yeah, 56% of the long down. Don't mess with people, Ian. 56% of the long down distance. So he really handled more of the passing down role. And then it was really Jamar Jefferson just backing up Jamal Williams and handling the other 19% of the rushing attempts. So it does look like it's probably a three-way committee if we don't have DeAndre Swift. Really, really more of a two-way. You know, Jamar Jefferson wasn't out there a ton. He was he's more the second guy up. I think if Jamal Williams went down, Jamar Jefferson's the next player up. And I think Godwin is really taking over more the Swift role. We don't know what would happen if Swift missed another game or two and we actually see the Lions just getting beat really badly. Would that mean more snaps for Godwin, like what we've seen, you know, with DeAndre Swift in the past? I think that's a possibility. I would like to think that the Lions would try to figure out how to keep Jamal Williams on the field, but it is the Lions, Ian. You know, you would think, you know, Jamal Williams seems like a great knee biter. You know, so I don't know why they don't know out there biting kneecaps. But for the receivers, Josh Reynolds, again, for the third week in a row, saw routes over 80%. He was the third most targeted Lion today, though. You had 32% go to Amon-Ra St. Brown, and he had 12 targets in, 10 receptions, 86 yards, and a touchdown. By far his best game of the season as a rookie. And then you had second on the team, TJ Hockenson, 22% of the targets, 32% of the air yards. TJ Hockenson led the way. Hockenson had a touchdown really early in this game. He had a shot, you know, close to another one. So he had a chance for an even bigger day. But 8 targets, 4 receptions, 49 yards, and a touchdown for TJ Hockenson.
This was against one of the worst secondaries in the league, and Eric Kendricks was out. So let's not overreact too much to some of these Detroit Lions passing totals. But hey, man, with that said, kudos to them. They got that monkey off their back, got that W. Real quick, Duane, because again, after what you told me about the, you know, beyond the box score utilization, I want to completely change what I said about Jamal Williams the rest of the way. Certainly looking more like someone that's probably going to be ranked in that 20 to probably like, you know, RB25 range as opposed to that mid-tier RB2 I was saying. Would you agree with that?
Are you going to go with low-end RB2 or borderline RB2? Like, which one are you choosing? You could use either, you know.
I'm going to wait until Tuesday, Duane. I'm going to think it over.
Okay, I like it. That's what we call a tease in the business.
Final note that I have here is just that Alexander Mattison, you know, not only is he getting the volume, but he actually was making the most out of it. So I want to get that clear. 5 broken tackles on the ground this week. Only Jonathan Taylor had more. Not saying Alexander Mattison is as good as Jonathan Taylor. He's also a little bit more than just a volume based RB1. Gotta love that. Tampa Bay Buccaneers took down the Atlanta Falcons 30-17, covering as an 11-point favorite. The under cashed at 51. Shouldn't have been this close. Pretty much the only mistake Tom Brady made on the afternoon was a really bad pick 6 right before halftime. Tried to throw a quick screen to, I believe, Fournette. Might have been Giovanni Bernard, and defensive lineman made a sick one-handed catch. Took about 2 more steps, and he was in the end zone. But other than that, Brady, 368 yards, 4 touchdowns against the Falcons secondary that he absolutely owns. Since he has played the Falcons now in 4 games since joining the Bucs, Brady has thrown 15 touchdowns in those games. Matt Ryan only has 16 touchdowns this entire season. So that's what Brady is doing to the Falcons. And a lot of it was going to Chris Godwin. 17 targets, people. We caught 15 of them for 143 scoreless yards. Mike Evans caught 7 of his 10 targets for 99 scoreless yards. Where are all the scores going? Of course, Rob Gronkowski caught 2 of his four targets, two of his four receptions went for touchdowns, ended up finishing with 58 yards. And of course, our guy, Leonard Fournette, had the pitch in, 7 catches, 48 yards, and another score himself. And it was a nice one too, man. One-handed catch. Leonard Fournette is, you know, I think he's a legit good receiving back now. Maybe it's just a big time factor playing with Brady, but really when he had those, you know, gaudy numbers in Jacksonville, I thought most of his receiving ability was just super volume dependent. I didn't think he was anyone that could be construed as a good receiver, but I was wrong, like I've been many times and like I will be many times again. So great to see Fournette just emerging as one of the most matchup proof backs in the league. Some of you still sent me start sick questions with Leonard Fournette this morning. Stop doing that. I was nice. I said Leonard Fournette, but just realize everyone, top 5'8" running back, whatever he is, start him every single week, even if there is a fire. Start pretty much everyone from this Tampa Bay offense if you can help it, because they are that good. So again, Brady, all these receivers absolutely crushing it. The only sheesh I had for him was that Gronk honestly had a chance for a third touchdown early on, but there was a penalty, so he ended up just getting them closer to the goal line. Regardless, I think Fournette capped that drive off on it with a touchdown. On the Falcons side of things, wasn't, you know, our best performance from Matt Ryan. Took 5 sacks, so wasn't able to clear the 300-yard mark on 41 attempts and didn't find the end zone. But he did enable a guy that, Dwayne, you were able to really change my mind, and I hope the listeners' minds about this week, Russell Gage, who, yeah, we had some goose eggs earlier in the year, but don't look now. He's really starting to establish himself as the number one receiver in this offense. He caught 11 of his 12 targets for 130 yards. Nobody else had over 50. I want to give Kyle Pitts some credit, though, because we have been hard on him on this podcast because he hasn't been producing very much. Again, only one touchdown the whole year, and it came against a Jets defensive lineman. He almost had like one of the best plays I've seen from a player at his position, though. He caught a pass for like 10 yards, stiff-armed a dude to the ground, hurdled the guy, said defender, on the ground, and it looked like he was off the races for about a 60-yard touchdown. Just barely stepped out of bounds by about an inch. So Kyle Pitts is, you know, flashing from time to time that ability. Still remains just 21 years of age. I don't think we need the whole fantasy community like doing these 17 game pace receiving yard stats to try to prove to everyone, you know, how right the process was. We get it. I don't think there's anyone out here, you know, in August that was saying, for the love of God, don't draft Kyle Pitts. He's not even a top 10 tight end. You know, I think it's a fairly unanimous L, if you want to call it that, based on the entire community really rallying behind him. Either way, I mean, still think he'll have a bright future ahead of him, just maybe not consistently in 2021. At least we got our guy Cordarrelle Patterson, though, chipping in 78 rushing yards, another 18 receiving yards. His 39-yard run, like, I will have that all 22 out tomorrow morning because it was gorgeous. But yeah, maybe not the biggest game for CPAT, but you know what, Dwayne, Kingsday Kings, he's trying to learn defensive playbook as well. We can't expect CPAT to win every game for this Atlanta Falcons franchise, but Lord knows he will continue to try. Only injuries I really saw, Goblin got hurt early, but then came back, so that was good to see. And Ronald Jones actually had to leave early due to an illness, so I think that's why Fournette was actually dominating the snaps and touches a little bit more than usual. So, Dwayne, is that what you saw behind the box score, like Fournette just continuing to dominate usage in all facets of the game? But, I mean, I say that, but he's really been doing that more weeks than not anyway.
Right. Yeah, no, he's completely script-proof at this point. I mean, Gio Bernard and Ronald Jones, they had 10% of the snaps and 3% of the snaps.
Jeez.
So just not a factor. 6% of the rushing attempts to Jones, 6% to Gio. But the short down and distance, 100% to Leonard Fournette, 75% of the long down and distance to Fournette. Of course, rushing attempts, 78%. Routes, 77%. I mean, Fournette is in some very, very, very elite company right now as far as his utilization. And like you said, he's actually playing pretty well right now. Today, 2.46 yards after contact. Didn't have any explosive runs, but very involved in the passing game. 21% targets per route run, which is elite. 16% target share. So he had 8 targets, 7 receptions, 48 yards, got in the end zone for you through the air. So just his involvement in the passing game, not just being out there for those downs, but there's just, it feels like we're at that point where it's just going to, Fournette's going to score at least a touchdown every single week, is the way I feel. You're just in a really great offense. Gronkowski's leading all tight ends in the NFL in a targets per route run basis. Again, today looked really good at 21%. Only 16% of the team's target share overall, but like you mentioned, 2 touchdowns. He gets plenty of looks once they get down inside the end zone, or inside the 10 and in the end zone. Those end zone shots, a lot of them go to Gronk. You know, he may be slow, but those hands are still vice grips. They're so huge. Like when you see him catch the ball, it's just like with those white gloves, it's just like, I mean, it's a true giant scenario. Like his hands are like, I think 11 inches, like pinky to thumb, like the wingspan on him. He's just got huge hands. So, Breshad Perriman, you know, empty stats today, but just something to keep an eye on with Antonio Brown, you know, out. I mean, it'd only be really one more game. But he was actually out there for 90% of the routes. It was not Ty Johnson. Ty Johnson only 13% of the routes. So if you've got a punt play next week for the Bucs, it probably would be Perriman. Wasn't targeted except on 6% of the occasions today. But we know Perriman, you know, he can make a big play, you know, so he could always come through. And if Brady finds him in single coverage, you know, he's the type of quarterback that will identify it and take the shot. So just something to think about next week for DFS. You know, he'll probably be really cheap. As far as the Falcons backfield, Mike Davis did come through because he scored a touchdown, 32 yards rushing, and he had a touchdown. He was more involved in the passing game, had 15% or 10% of the targets today, 15% targets per route run, but only 18% of the team's rushing attempts. 55% of those still went to Cordarrelle Patterson. He did best Patterson today in routes, 59% to 39%, which is the first time that he's done that in a while. And he was slightly above Patterson from a standpoint of snaps as well. But they're still designing more things for CPAT. And like you said, I mean, you know, CPAT's going to come through with big plays. It's just more robust utilization anyway, as far as they can move him around, they can protect him from matchups. It's just hard for CPAT to bust at this point. Like we've just seen him be too good for too long, but he had 26% targets per route run today. So he continues to be, when he's on the field, even if he's not running a ton of routes, which he's ran more lately, it doesn't matter. They make up for it by just figuring out like when he's out there, they're going to get him the ball. Russell Gage. So if you look at Gage over the last 3 weeks, target shares of 26%, 25%, and then today, 31%. And he's had wide receiver finishes of 36, 14, and then whatever he is today, because I haven't had a chance to calculate it. But Gage, to be honest, man, like he's a lock in the wide receiver three range. I mean, yeah. He's kind of pushing towards high-end wide receiver three.
He'll probably be top 30 with the buys coming next week, Stone.
Yeah, 3.25 yards per route run again today. 100% of his passes thrown his way were catchable. So he and Matt Ryan, they are clicking right now. What was really nice was before this, really, we had just seen Gage be more the option against man coverage. Today, this was I haven't got to see how much zone the Bucs ran today. So, I mean, they could have used more man. They have been getting healthier in their secondary, but, you know, as far as trends go, the Bucs have been using, you know, zone a ton, and that's an area where they had seen them really not use Gage quite as much, but he was heavily utilized today. So with 11 receptions, 430 yards on 12 targets.
Had some nice spins too. As long as Russell Gage does not hurdle things.
Yeah. Spins were good.
Yeah.
He's got to avoid the triangle. Just hit the circle.
Yes, exactly. All right, people, before we continue with these games, I just want to give a quick note. First of all, thank you to everyone that has reached out about doing the listener interviews. We've already done a lot of those, and I have a bunch more in my DM inbox that I need to get back out to. Please don't be offended if I don't answer your DM for a couple of days. I just only look through it a couple times a week. I will get to you. And again, I just really thank you all for the time, for the support, and we will continue to get that figured out. So thank you again to everyone that has volunteered. But we have another ask, and again, this is purely to help you all because the holiday season is here, and because the listeners to this podcast are the best of all the PFF podcasts, we just want your help to create a list of what PFF should build for you. We are looking for ideas to help build better PFF products to help make your experience better. So you can email us at contact@pff.com. That's contact, contact, at pff.com with the answers to these questions. What PFF feature do you love the most, and what do you want most from PFF? Again, what PFF feature do you love the most, and what do you want from PFF? Feel free to tell us which podcast sent you so we can put your ideas into the wish list for 2022. Just trying to make our product better for all of you. It's a win-win situation. Again, you can email us at contact@pff.com about which PFF feature you love the most and what you want most from PFF. Moving right along, Cardinals took down the Bears 33-22 in this one, covering as an 8.5-point favorite. The over cashed at 43.5. Kyler is back. He looked every bit as fast as he usually did. Looked like the fastest guy on the field. Managed to find his way into the end zone twice because of that. Otherwise, though, we can pretty much throw out what happened in the passing game. This was an ugly game in Chicago that the Cardinals were up 14-0 very shortly into. We had Andy Dalton throwing a pick seemingly every time we dropped back to pass. Because of that, Kyler Murray only threw the ball 15 total times. So thank God one of those was to DeAndre Hopkins for a nice 20-yard touchdown down the sideline. Otherwise, basically everyone in this offense busted, other than our guy James Conner, who just keeps on playing great. Like, if if I had to talk about like how James Conner was going to work out this year, it for sure would have been under the idea that, okay, Edmonds gets hurt and then Conner just gets so much volume he can't bust, which, yeah, that has played into it, but he's looked good with this volume. He had one of the best scores of the day on that 23-yard touchdown catch, made a one-handed snag where like he had to turn his body, broke a tackle, and then found his way into the end zone. So Conner, man, he looks like he's playing like in the 240s. The dude's a truck out there, but he's also still showing some speed and some hands to boot. Great to see from Conner. Chase Edmonds is eligible to return off IR next week, but even then, it's going to be tough to keep Conner out of that upside RB2 conversation. You know, he's losing the pass down role will not help. Like, I get that. But at the same time, he was already returning borderline RB2 value anyway because of all the touchdowns. And who knows if Edmonds is going to get his usual rollback with the way Conner has been humming. I think that's most of the notes from the Cardinals. He actually could have had, there was one down par for Conner. So he had the receiving score. He had a nice breaking tackle run down to the 1-inch line. And then the Cardinals, being good friends of James Conner, gave him back-to-back carries at the 1-inch line, and he got stuffed both times. So that was the only negative for Conner. Could have been a 2-touchdown day with just about another inch of yardage. Over on the Bears, Dalton, not one, not two, not three, 4 interceptions, tipped, were his fault. It was not a good showing. He did make the tackle on 2 of them, so at least Dalton doesn't need to have, the nationwide scrutiny that Teddy Bridgewater had a couple weeks ago, and we don't have to go down that rabbit hole discussion again. So good job, Andy. You made those tackles. No one can take that away from you, but please, for the love of God, let Justin Fields take that starting job back once that rib injury is good to go. Jakeem Grant scored a touchdown. David Montgomery had a big day. Jimmy Graham has no trade clause, and he scored a touchdown. And really, otherwise, the big guy in Chicago was David Montgomery. And I'm happy, Dwayne, because we've been telling people to continue to trust David Montgomery because of how good his utilization is. So had his initial goal line touchdown ruled short, and then Jimmy scored that one. So even though David Montgomery obviously didn't disappoint with 141 yards and a score with those 8 catches, just realized he, like James Conner, was about 1 inch away from adding another score to that tally. So, Dwayne, I'll throw it over to you. We can kind of start with Montgomery, because we saw Khalil Herbert truly play some great ball when Montgomery was missing time, and Chicago does not care. David Montgomery right now is up there as one of the most single-featured backs in the league.
Yeah, 81% of the rushing attempts, over 70% of the snaps again. 100% of short down and distance. They did get Khalil Herbert a little bit involved today, but still 60% of long down and distance, 60% of the two-minute offense. He's an every down back. 45% target per route run. Good job, Andy Dalton. Got to check it down. 23% target share today for David Montgomery. So he had 9 targets. He had 8 receptions for 51 yards. Got to play from the slot a little bit too. They move him around. But just an every down back. As far as the rest of the Bears go, Cole Kmet, I know Dalton didn't give us a lot to cheer for, but this is multiple games in a row. Now, he did get hurt the last game, so he was kind of limited in practice all this week, so I was wondering what was going to happen, but he did have 6 targets, 3 receptions for 41 yards out there, 78% of the routes again. So he's been right around that 80% mark, and then targets per route run has been right around 20%. So he's getting close to the marks that we want to see. And also, it's just kind of a dynasty thing. If Komet's someone that you're kind of waiting on, you've got him on your roster. I mean, he does look like he might be starting to show signs of being, that promising prospect that some folks thought that he really would be. So we'll have to see. Let's see what it looks like with real quarterback play. Yeah. But he is out on the field enough that you can consider him even in DFS, as something if you're just wanting to pay down at tight end. I do feel comfortable enough that he's involved in the offense. Darnell Mooney, still out there 94% of the routes. Just wasn't his day, Ian. And part of it all ties back to, our guy Andy Dalton. If you look at Darnell Mooney's ADOT today, it was just all the underneath stuff. It was 5.6. 0% of his targets came 20 yards or more down the field. He did move all around the formation still. 52% of his routes came from the slot, so I like that. They just weren't able to push the ball down the field to Mooney. So it was kind of a spread out attack today for the Bears. 18% of the targets to Mooney, 18% to Bird, 18% to Grant, 15% to Komet. So just really more of a your typical Andy Dalton at this point in his career, right? Kind of dink and dunk game. Not to say Dalton never pushed it down the field. He used to with AJ Green, just not doing it right here in Chicago. As far as the Cardinals side, yeah, we'll have to wait and see what's going to go on with Chase Edmonds. Is he going to be back next week? He will be eligible, but I'm kind of with you, man. It's like, I know we'll have to treat Connor more as a low end, you know, RB2 until we know, but I just feel like at this point you should just roll with Connor. Like, he just gives you an element of that physicality, you know, in the running game that really Edmonds isn't going to give you. Edmonds is almost more of a mirror of what Kyler Murray gives you, right, as a runner. Obviously, Murray being the more elite of the two. But I think Connor is kind of like more like the thunder to go with the lightning of Kyler Murray, and just gives you more functionality, I feel like, in your offense. So we'll have to wait and see what happens with it. But Connor played great today, 20 carries, 75 yards. Explosive runs of 10 yards or more on 10% of his carries, was involved in the passing game as well, 13% of the targets, but 67% of the rushing plays, 91% of the snaps, out there all the time, 78% of the long down distance, had everything. DeAndre Hopkins, first game back, 83% of the routes, 74% of the snaps, only 13% of the targets, but, you know, the Cardinals really never had to stretch their legs out in this game. Like, as far as the passing game goes, they were up, you know, from the get on the Bears. Their defense had the Bears number. Andy Dalton kept turning things over. So it was just never something where they had to utilize all of these weapons in the passing game. But we did see Christian Kirk dip back down, and we'd seen this before early in the season when you had Hopkins and Green and Kirk and then Rondell Moore working in. And it was before Zach Ertz. We had seen issues with Kirk kind of bouncing around, right? Is he going to be at 80%, 70% of the routes, or is he going to be at 60%? He was at 61% today. So he's going to get a downgrade in the utilization report. And it was kind of inevitable once you get all these guys back because it's such a rotation. His target share wasn't bad, 20%, which actually led the team, but he was only able to turn one of those targets into a reception. So that kind of tells you how much the Cardinals threw the ball. Three targets equaled 20% target share. They just did not have to throw the ball. So Rondell Moore, 61% of the routes, but the big one is really Zach Ertz, 78%, because a lot of his routes come from the slot. So it was interesting to me to see what happens once you get DeAndre Hopkins back. He's working outside. Christian Kirk needs to kick back inside. And this could flip-flop from week to week. But I think Ertz is really, once I dig into it more, Ertz is probably the biggest problem for Christian Kirk at this point because he's operating a lot of the time out of the slot, like I was saying. He didn't have that many targets today. And what I'm talking about is Ertz, 78% of the routes there, 13% target share. And so that only comes out to two targets, one reception, 10 yards. So he definitely stunk it up in the box score. But the encouraging thing is still right at that 80% of the routes.
Hopefully, I know it hasn't been the season people were hoping for that drafted DeAndre Hopkins as high as they did, but we got the Rams, the Lions, the Colts, and the Cowboys over these final 4 weeks. I would like to think the Rams, Colts, and Cowboys will force Kyler Murray to try to be Kyler Murray a little bit more often. That should lead to more production for Nuke and everyone else involved. Dolphins took down the Giants to win their fifth straight game. How about that? Miami going to the bye, riding high, 20-9, covering as a 7-point favorite, the under cashed at 40. So this Giants offense was predictably terrible. We talked about it all week against this blitz heavy defense, not having Daniel Jones, and Mike Glennon just really didn't have too much of a chance back there. He took three sacks. He threw a pick. He tied with Taysom freaking Hill with a week high 4 turnover worthy plays. And we found out afterwards that he was playing through a concussion apparently, or suffered it at the end of the game. One of the two, either way, not much to write home about this Giants passing game. Kenny Galladay actually did look like a little more spry, I think, than usual early on. Beat Byron Jones for a gain or two and was out there actually making a contested catch or two. The problem was he then suffered a ribs injury, returned, and whether it's him, Glennon, you know, the good coverage, just didn't see him really get going. Three catches for 37 scoreless yards on the day. Once Sterling Shepard, Kadarius Toney get back into action, it's going to be really difficult to trust Galladay as anything more than a throw up in your mouth wide receiver 4. Saquon Barkley, 11 carries, 55 yards. He also had 6 catches for 19 yards. So he's going to somewhat save his fantasy performance thanks to the reality that those 6 dump offs are equal to 60 rushing or receiving yards. But, you know, just again, when he's playing in this Giants offense that seemingly can't crack 10 points if they would try more weeks than not, we're just not going to get that top 5 upside that we were hoping for. Really cool moment from him, though, was he tried a spinning hurdle, which I have never seen anyone attempt before. So there were moments in this game, and we can go back to last week, too, when he busted a nice 32-yard run. Like, there were 3 or 4 plays in this one where it did kind of look like vintage Saquon breaking a tackle or two. Problem is, you know, you can break 2 tackles, and when there's 3 guys following them, it's hard to expect all that much. So truly just another pathetic effort from the New York Giants. We were hoping for a bounce back with when he remove Jason Garrett from the equation. That has not come to fruition. Generally, other than Saquon, who's going to continue to be a volume-based RB2, if you can avoid starting people from this team, I would try to do so. Over on the Dolphins, though, and they now enter their bye at 6-7, Tua, largely very good game, 244 yards, 2 touchdowns. They don't ask him to do all that much. It's the most RPO-heavy team in the league, but they don't ask him to do that much because the offensive line really can't handle having to do anything at all. So really could have been a better game from Tua. He hit Mike Gesicki right in the dome, headshot for a potential 12-yard score, bounced right off. So it was good coverage, but come on, that ball hits you in the head. You should be coming down with it. And got an extra dagger into the Mike Gesicki fantasy managers when Mac Hollins proceeded to catch a touchdown and they ran the Gesicki graphic across it. It's always funny when they mess that up, Dwayne. No, I'm a victim too of the situation. Foster Moreau makes a catch and I'm like, oh, Hunter Renfrow with a catch. Like, terrible. But we make that mistake, and this graphic guy made the same mistake. So just want to call his ass out for not doing his job right there. Jalen Waddle's world, we're just living in it. 9 catches for 90 yards on 11 targets. But we also saw Devontae Parker back in action. Only had 5 targets, but he caught all of them for 62 yards. At least 3 or 4 of those, man, were some pretty nice contested deals. He was playing well before he got hurt this year. Hopefully he can stay healthy. Obviously, that's just been the story of his career. But, you know, going into the bye, if you see people parting ways with Parker, if Will Fuller's not going to be back in the equation, I do think Parker could maybe start flirting with some low-end wide receiver 3 goodness himself. I mentioned Gesicki. He did come back. He had another big drop as well. Could have been a much bigger day for Gesicki, but he did finish with 7 catches, 46 yards, and still had 11 targets despite Parker being back in action. So Waddle did leave after he had a big catch down the middle when it looked worrisome for a second, went back in the tunnel. I'm hearing it was just cramps, though. So he was back on the sideline running around looking good. You would like to think having a full bye week to recover, Waddle will be back to providing his now usual upside wide receiver 2 goodness in week 15 and beyond. Mentioned the injuries. And yeah, just real quickly on Waddle, his 17-game pace this year, 112 receptions, 1,110 receiving yards, and 6.5 total touchdowns. Dwayne, on the one hand with Waddle, I do wonder if in future versions of the offense, if he will be this much of a target hog, because let's face it, you know, his yards per reception, yards per target aren't the best in the world. I would understand if maybe they want to try to get some other guys involved in the future. They did sign Will Fuller for that reason. On the other hand, as we've seen, we know Waddle is so much capable of so much more as a fuel stretcher, as a big play threat, and we haven't even gotten those. I mean, it's looking great for 2021, man, but even beyond that, like Waddle, we could be looking at not a first round receiver next year, but someone that's probably going to be in the majority of top 20s, at least top 24s.
Yeah, I mean, he's in really elite company. You know, first, like being drafted in the top 8, right, of the NFL draft, and then coming out and having this targets per route run that he's had this year, his yards per route run. Like, he's checking, like, everything that we want to see, whether you're talking just redraft for next year, dynasty. Like, Waddle is, yeah, he's going to be shooting up boards. I agree with you. I think they could want to spread the ball around a little bit more. But the thing with Waddle is we don't know that he can't work outside. We don't know that he can't really be more. They've just asked him to be this one thing this year, and he's just happened to do that really well. And so I think there could also be a case that, like, if you have more weapons and you can push the outside vertical boundary and you give a guy like this more space to operate underneath, then a lot of these little catches, right, can turn into some of the plays like we saw last week, right, where he was able to hit the jets and split, you know, 2 defenders and go score a touchdown. So with Waddle, I'm with you. I'm really excited. You know, it's hard to imagine, you know, will he, you know, be someone seeing 28-30% of the targets all the time, but I mean, hey, he very well could. I mean, we'll have to see what happens with the Dolphins coaching staff and all that kind of stuff as well. But everything's encouraging. Like, he's in a really, really good spot. You know, I mean, the way I look at Waddle right now is, like, last year, we were super excited about CeeDee Lamb, and really Waddle's putting up very similar numbers, and Lamb last year operated a ton from the slot as well, right? So it's kind of similar, and they're both running for the catch guys, but we'll see Waddle get to work more outside next year and get to do some of the things that CeeDee Lamb's doing this year. They're different players, but we know that Waddle has the speed to get deep if he can beat press coverage and if he can get off the line. As far as the rest of the Dolphins go, Gesicki, we've talked about it multiple times. Look, the utilization is there, and look, the targets came. 26% of the targets today. We've talked about this really being more of a funnel between Waddle and Gesicki. We will see Parker probably get a little more involved, to your point. He had 13% of the targets today, and Parker, in his first game back after a four-game absence, 71% of the routes, was the deepest ADOT on the team at 11.6 today. You had Gesicki at 7.5, and then you had Waddle at an 8.2. So you had Gesicki and Waddle really working more intermediate, and Parker really, that's not super deep, like 11, like deep would be like 15, 16, 17 yards, but he was the deepest of the guys on the team. Miles Gaskin did, you know, keep, you know, his lead role, 64% of the snaps today, 63% of the rushing attempts, 100% of the short down distance. But interestingly, and we can never figure this stupid, you know, offense out, but 75% of the long down and distance and 69% of the 2-minute offense. So this is the first time he didn't show. Now, he didn't come through big in the box score, but like the underlyings are, like, he really did become like an every down back today, pretty much.
We did have before. Patrick Laird get hurt.
Okay, so there you go. Patrick Laird got hurt and opened the – so stupid.
Of course, so, that needs to matter, but it sadly does.
It does. No, it does. You're right, because I didn't have that note. I didn't know Patrick Laird got hurt. So there you go. So that's probably the only reason why, and we'll get Malcolm Brown back next week, and it'll just be, you know, a mess. You know, look, Gaskin is the lead back, and he's been getting most of the attempts. I was just excited to see the passing down work. So – just kidding. Probably won't see the passing down work. But Barkley, it's like you said, like, man, it's just the offense. It doesn't look good. He's looking better. He's looking fine, but they just can't sustain drives. They're not able to run enough plays. He was out there today for 49 snaps, 75% of the total snaps, handled 65% of the rushing attempts. He actually was a true every down back, 67% short down distance, 64% long down distance, 100% of the 2-minute offense. The other problem, though, man, is just the stuff rate. And it wasn't like he was juking and changing direction all the time behind the line. Only a 9% of the time did he change the point of attack. But 27% of Barkley's carries were stuffed. So stuffed rate, meaning 0 yards or less. So a third almost of his carries went for 0 yards or less. And it wasn't easy on Devontae Booker on his small sample size either. He was almost at a 20% stuff rate. So the offensive line is probably having problems right now for the Giants. I don't have all the offensive line stuff open in front of me, but we know that they've had problems there in the past. As far as the receivers, is real, man, there's not much to say just because it's all injury stuff. Man. You know, Kenny Golladay was only out there 58% of the routes, but you already hit on why. You know, he got knocked out with the rib issue. He did return, but they limited him after that.
Before we move on, everyone, moment of science, moment of silence. For
the moment of science. That's
I'm just ruining this. For the legend known as Odd Numbered Week, Miles Gaskin. Okay, moving on. Eagles 33, Jets 18. Philly covers at a 4.5-point favorite. Minshew mania. What you going to do when it runs all over you? The over cashed at 44. Yeah, Gardner was awesome. 20 for 25, 242 yards, and a pair of touchdowns, both of which went to your guy, Dallas Goedert. 6 catches on 6 targets for 105 yards and those aforementioned 2 touchdowns. Everything was right for Goedert over the past 6 weeks. It just happened to work out for him this time around. So I hope you guys continue to treat him as the top 10, top 8 fantasy football tight end that we have been preaching his utilization has told us he is. He finally came through in an absolutely major way. So, of course, we got a bye week next. It's likely that, you know, Nick Sirianni already said, rightfully, that Jalen Hurts will be back under center after missing this one with the ankle injury. But yes, Dallas Goedert, he has the usage of a top 10 tight end, continue to treat him as such. Unfortunately, this is still a very run heavy offense, and that when you have that, you're going to have someone like Dallas Goedert go off, and then you're going to have someone like Devontae Smith limp to just 2 catches for 15 yards on a minimum 4 targets. So going to be tough to get both these guys to ball out during any given week, and that is going to cap their ceilings. Like, if Dallas Goedert was in a real pass-heavy offense, we could be talking about a top five option at the position. Same goes with Devontae Smith to a lesser extent. He could be like a top 20 wide receiver. As things stand, we got to kind of accept him as more of a boomer bust wide receiver three. We've seen the flashes from Devontae all year, just a matter of volume, and he does not have enough of it. You know who does have a lot of volume? Miles Sanders, 24 carries, 3 receptions. Did he find the end zone? Of course not, because he's cursed. 135 touches without a touchdown this year. Second place is Tevin Coleman with 67. That is ridiculous. Miles Sanders literally has more than double the amount of touches of the next closest player in the NFL without scoring a touchdown. And who knows if it's going to happen anytime soon, because unfortunately he suffered another ankle injury to the same one that really he injured initially back in week 8. Was making a nice run around the end. He hurdled and just kind of came down funky on it. So hope you get better, Miles, because this was the most clear we've seen this backfield yet. Kenneth Gainwell, of course, had to take the touchdown from the pair. It like wasn't from the goal line or anything. I mean, Kenneth deserves some credit for that touchdown. Not so much for wearing number 14, really stupid number for a running back. But hey, this was a two-back backfield. I really apologize to anyone that started Boston Scott with any level of confidence, because he did not have a single touch in this one. Was coming in as a game time decision with that illness. You know, I tried to answer every start sit question with the other guy. That's kind of the mindset you need to take with this Philly backfield, where the only consistency throughout the year has been the general inconsistency going along with it. At least Miles Sanders did break this team's long streak that went back to like week 14 or 15 last year of not having a 100 yard rusher. So good game from Sanders. Could have been a great game if the touchdown gods just didn't absolutely despise him. Then we have Zach Wilson. I didn't get a chance to watch like every play of this game yet, but from the looks of it, I think he played pretty well, man. Like, you looked at him at halftime. He only had a couple incompletions. Yeah, he threw one horrendous interception over the middle in the second half, but he did find both Elijah Moore and Ryan Griffin for red zone touchdowns, and he had to deal with a week high 5 drops in this one. So just the fact that we kind of saw Wilson working better within the confines of the offense, I thought was positive, because we've seen him already have that playmaking ability when it breaks down, because he can throw the ball over a freaking mountain if he wants to. So the better he can just start to work again within more of the structure of the offense, get comfortable with that, and then decide when to start to go off script and do the stuff that his natural talent enables him to do, that's when we'll get the best version of it. So baby steps from Wilson. Just be careful about calling the dude trash after every performance, because again, can't really help it when you got your teammates dropping the ball 5 times, week high mark. Also shout out Elijah Moore. I hope you went back to him, because he has the usage of a legit wide receiver one now. And yes, he got help from Corey Davis re-aggravating that groin injury. He only had 3 targets on the day. But Elijah Moore, second straight week, team high in targets. He had 12 in this one. He caught 6 of them for 77 yards and a score. And for the second straight week, it could have been so much more, because he had a week high 135 unrealized air yards. So Elijah Moore is setting up as a consistent upside wide receiver 3, man, that I think we're going to want to try to squeeze into that starting lineup more weeks than not. Now we got to have an uncomfortable conversation, Dwayne. Everyone's favorite waiver wire darling a couple weeks ago, Ty Johnson. He had 3 touches in this game. We had also had Austin Walter coming out of nowhere. He had 3 touches this game. Tevin Coleman, 14 touches again. And Dwayne didn't look bad. 5 broken tackles on the ground, was tied with Madison and I believe someone else. Only Jonathan Taylor had more. As I said before, Tevin Coleman is the next closest guy to Miles Sanders in terms of most touches without a score this year. Should we be slowly but surely starting to believe in Tevin Coleman as the leader of his Jets backfield, or just screw it?
Just screw it.
Okay, that makes
sense. He was only out there for 39% of the snaps, 19% of the routes.
Say no more. Screw him and everything he stands for.
They just need good game scripts, and they've had them in the last 2 weeks. So Tevin Coleman is the lead back, but we're going to get Michael Carter back, and then hopefully Tevin Coleman won't matter once we get Michael Carter back. Ty Johnson was still the passing down option in this game. He actually led the team in snaps, kind of pulled a Mike Davis, a lot of empty air going on with the snaps for Ty Johnson, but he was out there for 89% of the long down distance, 100% of the 2-minute offense, 55% of the routes. Didn't check it down very much to him today. He could have been much more involved in the passing game if they wanted. The big takeaway on the Jets is obviously the guy, Elijah Moore, 63% of the air yards. You already hit on that. 33% target share, 34% targets per route run, 88% routes per dropback. Out there all the time, man. Like, Elijah Moore looks great. 12 targets, 6 receptions, 77 yards, and a touchdown, 2.2 yards per route run today. So over the last three contests, we've had target shares of today, 33%. Last week, 35%. The week before, 26%. So Elijah Moore, I talked about it a little bit on Twitter last week. I felt people like were just being overboard. Look, could it have been a better day? Yeah. Zach Wilson missed him in the end zone for another touchdown. Then the next play turns around and hits Ryan Griffin on a touchdown. So this could have been a 2-touchdown day for Elijah Moore. And obviously, anytime you have 12 targets and only 6 receptions, you wonder, well, what was going on? Well, 58% of those were catchable. So some of that definitely goes on Zach Wilson. But let's be honest, folks, like, people screaming for Joe Flacco and Mike White, like, really? Like, they're just as likely to come out here and totally bust. Like, people all of a sudden act like, oh my God, Joe Flacco is this great quarterback. So with Zach Wilson, he's continuing to improve. Does he need to get better? Yes, he does. But don't be so afraid of Elijah Moore. I just saw too many people on Twitter. Oh my God, I can't start Elijah Moore because Zach Wilson. 12 targets. That's all you need to know. Now just shut up, start Elijah Moore, and I love you. All right, Philadelphia, Miles Sanders, you already mentioned it. We'll have to watch what happens with the ankle. But 63% of the rushing attempts today, all the short down and distance. The passing down work did go to Kenneth Gainwell, 58% long down distance, 50% of the 2-minute offense. Boston Scott, to your point, you know, was basically a healthy scratch, even though he was suited up. You know, he only played 6% of the routes, 4% of the snaps. And those were probably after Miles Sanders got dinged. So I'll have to go back and look. Doesn't really matter right now. We get a bye week next week, but I'll break it down anyway in the utilization report. Devonta Smith still out there. Like, he's doing his thing. It's like you said, it's just, it's a run heavy offense when they're in control or they keep these games close. It'll be interesting to see what happens with the Eagles if they get pushed into more of these games where they're trailing. We actually, I guess, kind of did see that last week against the Giants for some odd reason. They couldn't, you know, just stay ahead of the Giants. But Devonta Smith, 87% of the routes, 19% of the targets, 25% of his targets came on 20 yards or more. Actually, Dallas Goedert involved down the field today. A fifth of his targets came on 20 yards or more. And he actually led the team, 24% of the targets and 36% of the air yards to the newly minted Dallas Goedert at tight end.
And again, Eagles do have a bye coming up. So it is good that Sanders should have an extra week to get that ankle right. That also means Jordan Howard has an extra week to get that knee right. Again, if you can, just try to avoid this backfield. Anything close.
We probably won't have answers.
Yeah. Exactly. We'll do our best, but you know, this is our warning. Colts blanked the Texans 31-0, covering easily as a 10-point favorite. The under cashed at 45. One of those games where Carson Wentz didn't have to do much because they have Jonathan Taylor, 32 carries, 143 yards, and a pair of touchdowns. Yeah, he lost a fumble. Who cares? Taylor can lose a fumble every week if he really wants to. Who's going to tell him no? At this point, the dude is a borderline god out there on the football field. And just to see, again, this game, like, all right, we had Deion Jackson coming at the end. He got a touchdown with 6 carries. But like, Naeem Hines couldn't be less of a threat to Taylor in any of these formats. It is Taylor's backfield. He deserves to be the overall RB1 pretty much regardless of the matchup the rest of the way. If we're seeing a true 30 touch ceiling for the guy, like, what more could we want? And they really have been doing this more so towards the end of last year and end of this year. So I took his last 16 regular season games in that stretch. 305 carries, 1,758 rushing yards, 21 rushing scores, and also 41 catches, 349 yards, and a pair of touchdowns. Jonathan Taylor, what an absolute monster. He continues to crush it. Week high, 6 broken tackles on the ground. And yeah, Carson Wentz only had to throw the ball 22 times. He did hit Ashton Doolin for a nice 2-yard touchdown on the goal line, second week in a row. Doolin has scored. Should you, you know, pick him up and just start really trusting Ashton Doolin down the stretch in the most important moments of your fantasy season? Abso-fucking-lutely not, people, but good for him, you know? Michael Pittman, though, did come through a little bit after a couple weeks of duds. Had 8 targets in this one, which was good to see. I mean, 8 targets and only 22 attempts, clearly trying to get him the ball. And we really saw that come to fruition with an additional 2 reverses that he converted for 33 yards. So overall, he had 110 scoreless yards on the day. Again, if the Colts are able to play a team that they can't just romp over, that's when we'll get the true booms from Michael Pittman. But it was good to see a score in this one. Disappointing. We didn't get T.Y. Hilton blowing up against the Texans, as he's done so many times over the past decade. But yeah, I mean, come on, that was always more fun than anything. Can't be trusting Hilton as anything more than probably a boomer bust wide receiver 4 if we want to be nice. Yeah, only sheesh in this one. Pittman actually could have had a touchdown. I kind of blame Wentz more. Like, it was from the 2-yard line and Wentz threw this thing like 100 miles per hour and it went off of Pittman's hands. So it hit the hands, and some people say it hits the hands. Should have been a touchdown. Either way, Jonathan Taylor got the score on the next play, so it didn't exactly impact the Colts. With the Texans, only note was that first it got unveiled over the broadcast that Tyrod Taylor got benched in the 3rd quarter. He actually suffered a hyperextended wrist, so he got injured, not led Davis Mills to come in. How many yards of offense the Houston Texans record? I'm happy you asked. 141. What a complete dumpster fire of an offense right now. I mean, Brandon Cooks, 3 catches for 38 yards, and he was the leader in terms of receiving yards. Rex Burkhead, 1 catch, 15 yards, 8 carries, 30 yards. You know, I did my 20 minutes start sit things Sunday morning once I finished with the PFF show. And I specifically wrote out, I was like, don't, even with David Johnson out, don't expect Rex Burkhead just to get 50 touches and all of a sudden become this star. What happened, Dwayne? We saw Jalen Samuels get involved. We saw Royce Freeman getting involved. You know, if you just want to move on from the Texans, that's fine. But if you want to use your handy dandy percentages and explain how freaking messed up this backfield is, that's cool too. Floor is yours.
Yeah, I think you hit it. Like, it's messed up. 46%, 42%, 15% to Burkhead, Freeman, and Sam.
Oh,
so, like, that's all you need. Pain. 53% pain. Of the rushing attempt did go to Rex Burkhead. He did, you know, see the most routes. Actually, this is so dumb. Royce Freeman had more routes than Rex Burkhead. Rex Burkhead's a passing specialist, but he led the team in rushing. This, everything's so backwards in Houston. I think you explained it best whenever you just went with Brandon Cooks and you said he is the leader. It was almost like I'm Ron Burgundy. 89% of the routes for Brandon Cooks and, like, whatever, 26% of the targets, but it's just a bad offense. On the Colts side of the ball, there's nothing new. Pittman's the one. Everything else is a rotation that you just want to stay away from outside of Jonathan Taylor in the backfield. Jonathan Taylor today forced a missed tackle on 19 or missed tackle force per attempt, 19%. Yards after contact, 3.09. An explosive run rate that's 10 yards or more on a carry, 16% of his runs. And it's just getting to where this is the normal thing, man. You know, somewhere between 10 and 20% of his runs go for at least 10 yards. Whenever you're getting, like you mentioned, 32 touches, it's giving you a shot at some really big plays to go along with his carries inside the 5.
Next up, we got the Rams taking down the Jaguars 37-7. We have reached the 4 o'clock games on this breakdown. Rams covered easily as a 14-point favorite. The under cash at 47.5. Rough first quarter from Matthew Stafford. And we've talked about how he kind of has like the worst 3 touchdown performances you'll ever see sometimes. This was not one of them. This was truly a good game from Stafford. And the last time I checked, you know, a couple minutes left in those 4 o'clock games, Stafford was PFF's highest graded passer on the week. So week high, 5 big time throws. He managed to get Cooper Kupp a touchdown, Van Jefferson, and our guy OBJ for the second straight week. Kupp in particular had another huge game, 8 catches, 129 yards, and a score. If the season ended tomorrow, Cooper Kupp, 100 catches, 1,366 yards, and 11 scores. If he keeps this up for the full 17 games, 142 catches, 1,935 yards, and 16 scores. Basically what Calvin Johnson did that 1 year with Stafford, but if Calvin like actually scored touchdowns instead of getting tackled at the 1 yard line seemingly every single time. Either way, we continue to see this pass game hum, and we've seen Jefferson and Beckham really do a good job stepping in for Robert Woods and helping this passing attack continue to be explosive down the field. So Beckham also had a 27-yard catch on a deeper cross. You know, he does seem to be in and out. Like, they're not going to waste him on run plays or anything like that, but clearly locked in. as the number three pass game option in this offense. Tyler Higbee did actually finish with one more target than Beckham, 48 scoreless yards, but we kind of know what we're getting with Higbee at this point. The real story was Sony Michel, who, yeah, we had to find out, you know, from Jay Glazer that Henderson would be active, but shout out to the GOAT, Jay Glazer, for pointing out that Sony Michel was going to be the featured back, and featured he was. 24 carries, 121 yards, and a score, also chipped in three receptions. Should have had a second score. I unfortunately missed this one with my own two eyes as I was trying to watch all four of these games, but heard from enough of you on the old Twitter sphere to still fire up the sheesh alert about it. So thank you for that. But basically, before the Beckham touchdown, Sony got a goal line carry, and none other than Matthew Stafford was responsible for keeping him out of the end zone, basically accidentally tackling his own RB1. You know, critics are starting to wonder if maybe there's a conspiracy there. Stafford wanted to get his third passing touchdown through the air. I guess we'll never know. Either way, great game from Sony and whoever. Like, Dwayne, when Henderson got ruled out, I deleted his name and I put Sony Michel on the spot. Did you do that?
Yep.
That easy sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, I moved him down a little bit just knowing Henderson was active. I moved him from 12 to RB 18 just to kind of help people just kind of temper just in case, you know, that Henderson was involved a little bit. Ended up being a non-factor, like you said. So 97% of the snaps, 80% of the routes, 89% of the rushing attempts. Obviously, I don't need to tell you about long down and distance and short down and distance because you can do the math. That means he was out there for all of that. 24 attempts, 121. So yeah, he was in a good spot. Nothing explosive, you know, still looked more or less like the Sony Michel we've not been very impressed with. But again, volume's what really matters. And in a good offense like the Rams, you know, there's going to be opportunity to score touchdowns, which he did today. The big thing with the Rams is really looking at the receivers. Ian Van Jefferson was second on the team. So Cooper Kupp out there for 100% of the routes. Van Jefferson, 90%. And it was Odell Beckham Jr. dipping down to 59% after being at 97% last week. Now, some of this is due to the late game situation where the Rams were leading. Like this was, you know, we had John Wolford in for a little bit. He actually came in for one snap early in the game when they thought Stafford might be hurt. Then he took a few snaps later in the game as well because it was just really out of hand. So some of this with Beckham was coming into the game, you know, questionable with a hip injury. So I don't want to read too much into it, Ian, but it was Van Jefferson right now looks like as the two, just like it was last week with Beckham being, you know, the three as far as playing time goes. As far as the Jaguars, you know, you got to get Laquon Treadwell out there. 92% of the routes, Laviska Shenault, 67%. So we've got another player that now needs to get out of Laviska Shenault's way. Like the list just keeps getting longer. Like they keep adding someone to it.
Just a couple more, Dwayne. A couple more and we'll be there.
I mean, look, I'm done with this guy. I don't want him in. I don't want him in Dynasty. I don't want him in season long. I never want to say his name again. James Robinson. You know, he was kind of in and out. You know, he had a fumble, but so did Carlos Hyde. So did Trevor Lawrence. Everybody had a fumble for the Jaguars. It was a big party. But Carlos Hyde and James Robinson pretty much split the work today. 49% of the snaps to Hyde, 44% to Robinson. Remember this week, Robinson actually was questionable all the way up through Saturday. Whereas in the previous weeks, he got in a full practice by Friday. On Saturday, it wasn't a question. So I think this is more of Robinson was playing through pain. I think his heel was bothering him more this week. So this is something that we'll have to monitor. But for right now, Robinson, looking at him as more of a low-end RB2, Ian, you know, mid-range RB2. If we got a full week of practice, like fully healthy, you know, like two or three practices in a row, then, you know, we might move him back up to mid-range or, you know, high-end RB2. If we thought he could get his complete rollback. But since the heel injury, he just hasn't had the passing downs. That's really gone more to Hyde. That continued today on the long down and distance, but we did see Robinson get a little more involved in the two-minute offense. He handled 100% of that. Unfortunately, the Jaguars just don't run the two-minute offense that much. So anyway, yeah, so Robinson, really for me, low-end RB2 right now. We need to see him get healthy.
Yeah,
don't want to touch anything in the Jaguars passing attack.
Absolutely not. Only
did you want to know about O'Shaughnessy?
No. I was just because I saw
good. I'm not
I saw the Roto-World tweet saying that Robinson was benched after the fumble, and he really might have been, man, because you know, he fumbled on his second touch of the game and they didn't give him the ball again until the very end of the second quarter in the 2-minute drill. So that's just so messed up, man. And then Hyde fumbles too. Like, what a freaking joke, Urban Meyer. Yeah. Congrats on everything you've accomplished this year on the 2-10.
Yeah, he sucks.
Freaking Jaguars. Unreal.
Urban Meyer sucks.
Yeah, I have nothing more to say about this team. Moving on, Washington football team takes down the Raiders 17-15, covering as a 2-point dog. Don't look now. Washington getting in the playoff race at 6-6, under cash at 47.5. Antonio Gibson, it is legal and for him to catch a touchdown pass. He did. He actually caught 5 passes on the day for 23 yards, chipped in another 88 yards on the ground with 23 carries. Like, Dwayne, the crazy part with Gibson, we've wanted this usage all season, but like we talked about this, he wasn't looking all that great with his usage for the first 9-10 weeks. Now we're getting the usage we want. And just from the eye test, I think he's looking better than he has all year long. So please, like, I'm knocking on wood, please let that shin stay healthy, because if we keep getting these touches and we have Gibson playing this way, he will continue to be a weekly RB1 regardless of the matchup on a Washington team that, let's face it now, is staying more competitive for ideal positive game script with him anyway. So great stuff from Gibson. Continues to reward his faithful fantasy managers. And great job, Taylor Heinicke, man. This is like now all of a sudden becoming a little bit of consistency for the guy. And if you look at him since their week 8 bye, he's now played 4 games. Might have been a week 9 bye. Anyway, he's played 4 games. Tampa Bay, he had our 8th best PFF passing grade. Against the Panthers, he had the number 1 PFF passing grade of the week. Last week against the Seahawks, he was 7th in pre-Sunday night football, 8th at 73.1 against the Raiders. So we're seeing consistency from Heinicke. The guy's a gamer. The guy's a grinder. He's getting it done for this Washington football team. I just wish he could enable, I don't know, his number 1 receiver a little bit more consistently, because Terry McLaurin continues to be a boom or bust wide receiver too in every sense of the word. He's got 4 or 5 like true top 10 finishes this year. The problem is, like, we just have no floor to speak of in this offense. So just 3 catches for 22 yards. And this one, the big receiver was Logan Thomas, who caught 3 of his 5 targets for 48 yards and a sick one-handed touchdown in the back of the end zone. And he also busted a big 35-yard catch and run where he was showing off the yak. Everything was going right for Logan Thomas until he suffered a knee injury, looked emotional on the bench. We'll need to see what happens. If he's out, it's going to be John Bates, who was actually involved anyway in this one. He caught 3 passes for 42 yards. Ricky Seals-Jones was inactive, though, with a hip injury. So, you know, Dwayne, we've talked about this all year. Whoever it is at tight end for Washington, you know, Logan, I think, offers the highest ceiling, and then RSJ, then John Bates. But with that said, if you're playing 100% of the snaps, if Heinicke's going to keep throwing them targets, even Johnny Bates can probably be a top 15 option in Fantasyland inside of this offense. Real quick now on the Raiders. Derek Carr, nice thrower too, but generally, I mean, we only saw him really hooking up consistently with Hunter Renfrow and Josh Jacobs in the short to intermediate areas of the field. Credit to Renfrow. This is going to be his 4th, I think, top 12 performance in the last like 5 weeks since Henry Ruggs went down. He didn't score, but 9 catches, 102 yards. If he's not top 12, it'll still be top 20. He's getting closer and closer to wide receiver 2 territory at this point. I could just see Hunter Renfrow. I mean, if Carr is going to stay in Vegas here for the next 4 or 5 years, like he's been for his entire career, like Renfrow could just start emerging as this like Jarvis Landry type guy who, I know they're different players, but year in and year out, just egregiously mispriced with their ADP, continues to come back and get it. So I don't think they would want to continue to feature Renfrow as their true number 1 receiver, but that really is what he's been doing ever since Ruggs has left the picture, and particularly with Darren Waller out. Of course, Foster Moreau, just 1 catch, 34 yards on 3 targets, didn't give people the sort of streamer performance they were hoping for. I mean, I don't know, Dwayne, like, I saw some people really freaking out about Foster Moreau. Let me see, where do you have him before this week? Because I liked him. I'm not trying to say I didn't, but at the same time,
I had him at 14 or so, somewhere around there.
I had Foster 14, Moreau 15. As my tight end 12, which a little higher, but yeah, it's not a 1-for-1 replacement with Darren Waller by any stretch. Still had guys like Goddard, Gesicki, Freiermuth much higher than that. So don't become a prisoner of the moment sometimes. You know, we see these guys get on the headline of every waiver wire article I think people start to think a little bit nonsensically sometimes. So Foster Moreau, he'll still be a borderline tight end one like he was this week. Don't feel like you need to fade him completely because of one down game. Also, probably shouldn't have been treating him as a top five, top six tight end if that was your thing going in this week. I mean, Foster Moreau versus TJ Hawkinson, like whoever sent me that start sit question, that's just an insult in my opinion. So anyway, Derek Carr, he threw a bomb to Zay Jones that showed off the arm strength at the end. It was just pretty cool to see. And that's why Zay Jones is second on the week in unrealized air yards. I just wish he could have done a little more of that with DeSean Jackson. The broadcast must have showed two or three times where Jackson was running free deep down the field. I know sometimes the ball is getting out quickly and maybe that wasn't the way he was being read, but I think we saw pretty clearly in that Cowboys game that the best version of this Raiders offense in the post-Ruggs era is going to be using D-Jax as their field stretcher. I don't know why he only had one target in this one. So Derek Carr, someone that we were really hoping could be a consistent, I think QB1 earlier in the year, I think it settled in as much more of a boom or bust wide receiver too. And the final point,
QB2.
There we go. It's just in my head, man. Just in my head.
He can run routes, I'm sure, Ian. I'm sure he can run some routes.
I'm just sleeping, you know, at night, just like muttering line wide receiver two over and over again.
Borderline.
With his running back, so this was interesting. So we had Jalen Richard put on the COVID IR before this game kicked off, and that led to Peyton Barber and Kenyon Drake being active. However, Drake suffered a right foot injury and was carted off early on, leading to Josh Jacobs catching 9 passes, also at 52 yards and a score on the ground. Dwayne is beyond the box score.
9 passes for 38 yards.
I know, but they're impossible. 9, man.
I know. Hey, it's 12.8 points.
That's why PPR is so stupid. But that's also, you know, it's the game we play. Better, so yes. tell the world just how borderline erotic this Jacobs usage was.
Yeah, it wasn't borderline. It was pretty erotic from a utilization standpoint. I mean, 85% of the snaps, 93% of the rushing attempts, 80% of the routes. Short down and distance, half. Kenyon Drake managed to be around for half. They didn't have that many short down and distance plays today. Long down and distance, almost 70%, and he had 92% of the two-minute offense. So Peyton Barber got out there a little bit once you saw Kenyon Drake get hurt. So moving forward, though, like if you're without Richard, if you're without Kenyon Drake, like Peyton Barber is more of like the replacement to Josh Jacobs, right? He's not really the complement to Josh Jacobs. So we could see Jake, you know, who knows? They might carve out a role for Peyton Barber in the passing game. They're going to rotate some. But Jacobs could be, we'll have to wait and see what these injuries say, but Jacobs could be in, you know, a situation where he's going to have an every down role pretty much, you know, for the foreseeable future. Depending again on the injuries. As far as Foster Moreau, look, people just got too excited about it, right? And I get it. Some of it goes back to, even though the utilization have been there for people like Goddard and Gesicki and some of these other folks, right? It's like when you don't see it 2 or 3 weeks come to fruition and you're not looking at the underlying stuff, which is why the utilization things matter. It's easy to say, well, I'm just going to stick this guy Foster Moreau in. You know, I saw a lot of people giving the advice to actually, yeah, just bump Moreau up. Why not? Just play Moreau. So I think some of it's just setting better expectations for ourselves. But Moreau was out there for 64% of the routes, which kind of surprised me because they only had 2 tight ends up. You know, they had Moreau and then they had Daniel Helm, who was only out there for 2 plays today. And so they were in a ton of 11 personnel. So what's interesting is Moreau is actually having to stay in and block. Because if you're out there 85% of the snaps and you're only on a route 64% of the time, so you're doing some blocking. Hunter Renfrow, 10 targets, 9 receptions, 101 yards, 27% target share. Hunter Renfrow. Hey, Renfrow, Moreau, they rhyme. 3 out of the last 4 weeks, he's had targets over 25%. And because they weren't able to be as multiple in their personnel today, some of that due to the way that the script worked out with Washington being ahead on them, some of that being due to injuries, 96% of the passing plays, he was in a route. So that's the season high for Hunter Renfrow. And if you look at him over, you know, typically it's really good if he gets to 80%. So 96% today. I haven't had a chance to check, Ian, if he was actually playing some outside as well. Probably most of it's 11 personnel, just looking at, they only had a fullback out there for 6 snaps and they had a second tight end only out there for 2 snaps. So my guess is it was just a function of playing 11 personnel almost all game long. You had Zay Jones, Brian Evers, DeSean Jackson all rotating really for the rest of that stuff. Zay Jones over the last 2 weeks, along with DeSean, really has become, you know, a deep threat. His ADOT today was a 26. So, I mean, you reeled off the unrealized air yards, which were huge. So the ADOT obviously was going to be bloated whenever you heard that stat. And then you had over on the Washington side of the ball, Gibson. 82% of snaps, 68% of the routes, which is really what we wanted to see. That's the big thing. 80% of the rushing plays, 100% of the short down and distance, but 50% of the long down and distance, and 100% of the two-minute offense. By far his biggest marks across, if you want to like kind of aggregate all that together, the 68% of the routes was really great. Wendell Smallwood was really a non-factor, played 33% of the long down and distance, but you can live with that. Like every back has somebody that's going to come in, you know, and relieve them in certain plays, right? It's just a matter of like, what situation do the coaches want to do that? Whether it be, oh, we're going to do it every third series on first and second down, or we're just going to give half of the long down and distance snaps. So for me, overall, looking at Gibson, the most telling thing is 68% of the time they were driving back to pass, he was in a route, which is what we want to see. If you can be between 65 and 75%, that's really elite. And so today he had 6 targets, 5 receptions, 23 yards. He was actually the leading target share on the red. God, I did that twice now on the football team. 20%, 17% to Logan Thomas. You already mentioned, you know, we're going to see what happened with him. Terry McLaurin was a little bit silent today, 17% of the targets. But we've just seen this with Terry, right? It's kind of this boom bust thing. And teams know that Terry is the number one weapon, right, for Washington in the passing game. So you're just going to have some of these situations where this happens. And it's what came through today. Adam Humphries was a little more involved than normal. I think it was just because we had to have the Clemson slot show between him and Renfro.
Naturally. Yo, Humphries, some of those early, I think he was on the same squad as like Watkins, Martavis Bryant.
Yeah,
and he was maybe on the even first Nuke round. For a yep. year. Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Woo, yeah.
Some and of those Renfro came behind in the next group. Yeah.
Yeah. Man. Yeah. All those guys broke my heart as a Buckeyes fan at least once or twice. But we got you guys in 2020. Seahawks 30, 49ers 23. Seahawks covered as a 2.5 point dog over hit at 44.5. I mean, Seattle like wanted to give this game away. We said a lot of good things about Gerald Everett on this podcast. The next 30 seconds will not be one of those times. He fumbled on the second drive of the game.
Triple sheesh.
Triple sheesh, man. Seldom seen triple sheesh. Fumbles on the second drive of the game. Just, you know, got a screen. He's a yak monster. I get it. Whatever. We can live with that. Later, Russ hits him at the 1 yard line. He would have fallen into the end zone. No problem. Not only did he drop the ball, it bounced off him and went to a 49ers defender for an interception. Double sheesh. Here comes a triple sheesh. They're inside the 5 yard line. They try a shovel pass to Gerald Everett. He catches it, gets possession of it, and then fumbles that too. Absolutely brutal performance from Everett. And I mean, 4 catches for just 7 yards on the day. That is miserable. You know, he's going to go ahead and make it out barely in the positive. I'm just happy that no one's going to lose their matchup because of a -1 from Everett. I guess that could actually happen in standard scoring. So if you were one of those poor souls, feel free to send it to me on Twitter. And a lot of people will probably help feel bad for you. But the good news was the rest of the Seahawks offense really did look much better than we have grown accustomed to seeing over the past 3 weeks. I mentioned how Russ's only interception went right off of Everett's hands. He was good than that, man. 30 for 37, 231 yards, pair of touchdowns, one to Tyler Lockett. Awesome, just over-the-shoulder throw. It reminded us of the better part of the last 5 years of Russ and Lockett showing off this mind-meld chemistry. Also hit D. Eskridge, their second-round rookie, for a score as well, so that was good to see. Lockett did briefly miss some time in the medical tent. He had a chance at like a 40-yard touchdown on this cool trick play, throwback pass. Thing it would have been a diving catch. Like, to call that a drop would be completely egregious, but you know, we're used to seeing Lockett make these insane catches. So just saying, 7 catches 68 yards and a touchdown for Lockett. He's actually been the one that's been overcoming some of the up and down nature of Russ in this offense in general over the past few weeks. Last week, Lockett had 96 yards. Week before that, 115 yards. Why is he having to do all this on, you know, such little target share? Story for another day, but at least he continues to produce. Metcalf was getting closer as well. 5 catches, 60 yards on 8 targets. Could have had a 32-yard touchdown. He won one-on-one, was open down the sideline. Russ sailed it out of the end zone. With some of these, like, I understand it'd be tough to you know, we expect so much out of them that, like, who the hell am I to say that should have been a completion or whatever? Metcalf ripped his helmet off, was pretty pissed, and they immediately showed him talking to Russ on the sideline afterwards. So safe to say that one was a sheesh, but it was a good game from Metcalf. He positioned them for an Adrian Peterson win now touchdown at the goal line when he was able to make a nice catch and generally look like the beast that he is out there. So hopefully they continue to, you know, feed the ball to their top two receivers. What a novel concept that is, and it got the Seahawks a victory. Over on the 49ers, real quick, pretty condensed game. I mean, George Kittle went the hell off. 9 catches, 181 yards, and 2 scores on 12 targets. Then we have Brandon Ayuk really pissing people off to start. He did finish with 3 catches and 55 yards on 6 targets. Not what we were looking for, but Kittle's going to Kittle sometimes, guys. Like, he is truly, in my opinion, the best all-around tight end in the game. Kelsey's the best pass catcher, but I think Kittle, with the blocking and everything else he does, is the position's best player. And if you want to say, you know, the best ability is availability, we can have that conversation. Top two, whatever. Either way, I mean, when they do use him as a receiver, it has been nothing short of ridiculous. Over the past 2 seasons, the top 5 players in yards per out run with at least 100 targets. Number 1, Davante Adams. Number 2, Debo Samuel. Number 3, Justin Jefferson. Number 4, George Kittle at 2.66. Absolute madness how efficient he can be when Kyle decides to let him be a receiver instead of block. Dwayne, this is where I'll kind of turn over first. Jimmy Garoppolo, sheesh. Come on, man. We're hyping you up. We're giving you love. I went on a rant last podcast about how we've been shitting on Jimmy G, but he played better. And we want quarterbacks to play better, so we were giving him love. He was PFF's highest graded passer since their week 7 bye. This one was not good. He threw 2 interceptions, both of which were miserable. Yeah, he was able to get Kittle on a nice touchdown early, but a ton of it otherwise was just getting the ball in his hand in short yak situations. So was not one of Jimmy's better days. Continuing to get nothing even close to a rushing floor. Jimmy is a good to very good quarterback more weeks than not. We know who he is, but he also has a floor. He will make these turnovers, and he's just not careful enough with the football, in my opinion, to be someone that's also not giving you that big of a ceiling either. So obviously the Trey Lance, you know, idea that he was going to start in 2021, that ship has sailed. Here's to hoping Jimmy G will at least be the better version of himself more weeks than not here moving forward. Final note before we get to the backfields is just that Alex Collins was inactive with an abdomen injury, and Travis Homer ripped off a 73-yard touchdown run as a member of the punt team. So they ran a fake punt, direct snap to him. He made a guy miss and ended up scoring. Dwayne, Adrian Peterson signed this week because the Seahawks are quote-unquote in win-now mode. He proceeded to get 11 carries, but we also had Rashad Penny getting 10. What did you see from this backfield overall, and is it as big of a mess as it looks like in the box score?
It's an absolute mess. It's like Houston. So great. 44% of these snaps to Penny, 24% to Peterson, 27% to Homer. DJ Dallas got out there for 3%. Those were probably all special teams. 50% of the rushing attempts to Rashad Penny, 41% to Peterson, 5% to Homer. Routes per pass play, 27%, 27%, and 14%. Again, the order is Penny, Homer, Peterson. And so you did have Homer out there for the 2-minute offense, 100%, long down and distance, 75%. So basically you have two backs sharing the early down work, and then you have a passing down back, which could also split with a guy like DJ Dallas. And so it's a complete mess. You do not want to touch it with a 10-foot pole. When you get Alex Collins back, like, it doesn't really matter like which ones are active. Like, you don't want any part about it. The big thing for the Seahawks really today, Ian, is 65 offensive plays. Now, that's before I'm removing their penalties, but still, like, just to see them with a number that starts with a 6 in front without it failing to have something behind it, like just 6 plays.
I wouldn't put it past them.
I know, man, right? So, I mean, the problem has been, like, we've had these guys down, like, near 50. And so it helped out today when you look at someone like Lockett and Metcalf, when you get 23% of the targets and you actually, you know, go figure, run a few plays, then these targets that we've seen look like 4 or 5 now turn into 8 for each of them, right? 8 targets, 5 receptions for Metcalf, 8 targets, 7 receptions for Lockett. Both were out there plenty. Dwayne Eskridge still trying to work his way into, you know, some playing time, but it's really still splitting with Freddie Swain. So just something we'll kind of keep an eye on. Gerald Everett, you already hit. You hit the triple sheesh. I'll leave that one alone. As far as the 49ers go, Elijah Mitchell, 84% of the snaps, 58% of the routes, 93% of the two-minute offense. That's a first for Elijah Mitchell. So maybe we're going to see more passing down work. He did give way on long down and distance, right? Which is when you're typically inviting the blitz, right? So you're talking like 3rd and 7, 4th and 10, 3rd and 10. It's just technically 3rd and 3 or longer, but a lot of these end up being, you know, plays where you know you're going to get man coverage across the board and you're going to get a blitz. So that's why they want to get a guy like Kyle Juszczyk out there for those plays. 88% of the long down and distance still going to Mr. Juszczyk. As far as Elijah Mitchell, this is first game, Ian, like in a while. Actually, this is first game all season where he hasn't just blown it up from an explosive run rate. 0% of Elijah Mitchell's carries today went for 10 yards or more. That's a first on the season. You know, so it wasn't really his day. Seattle Seahawks, you know, rushing defense is not really, it's not very good. But they came to play today against the 49ers and they were able to limit Mitchell, but he did get a score for you, 66 yards and a rushing touchdown. And he got the 3 targets, 3 catches, 18 yards. So still firmly in the low end RB1, you know, range for me playing in this 49ers offense. I would not change that. And Kittle, right? The utilization has been there for Kittle, just like it's been there for Goddard, just like it's been there for Gesicki. But with Kittle, we knew there was absolute elite talent that had proven itself in the past. It all came through today. 47% of the air yards for the team from the tight end. 6.24 yards per route run today. How about that, Ian? That's pretty good. 41% targets per route run. Out there for 87% of the time that the 49ers dropped back to pass. 181 freaking yards on 9 catches and 2 touchdowns. So George Kittle, we all know it. We all love him. Top 3 tight end rest of the way. Brandon Ayuk, this is kind of weird. You know, the way this game worked, you thought Ayuk might get more involved, but they really have not favored Ayuk very much for whatever reason against zone coverage. I thought that might change today because Debo and Kittle have been their 2 lead targets. And the Seahawks run zone pretty much like all the time, like over 75% of their plays. But it kind of stuck today until late in the game when they absolutely had to have it. Then I did come through. He ended up with a 21% target share. But you and I have talked about this multiple times. When you have a team that doesn't run a ton of the plays and about half of those plays can be rushing plays, it gets tight, you know, when you're trying to spread to figure out how the ball is going to be spread around. It's similar to what we talked about earlier with the Eagles. The 49ers are the run heaviest team in the NFL, or at least they were heading into this last week. So it's a situation where it's going to be hard once we get Debo back to always think that all 3 of these receivers can eat.
Also, this was the first time in weeks that Jermichael Hasty was healthy, just 1 backfield snap. So great to see Mitchell really, again, have some of his best usage yet, even with Wilson and Hasty active, Trey Sermon on IR for the rest of the season. Just some quick injury updates. You know, we always do this podcast during Sunday Night Football, so the news continues to trickle in a little bit. But unfortunately, that Logan Thomas injury is reportedly expected to be a torn ACL. The MRI will be coming. Dwayne and I talk every Monday, it's available on Tuesday, about the waiver wire options. But yes, John Bates, Ricky Seals-Jones, depending on how that hip's doing, they will be perfectly fine streamer options at tight end. And also, Adam Thielen suffered a high ankle sprain during that loss. The Vikings have a short turnaround with a Thursday night game against the Steelers, so certainly not expecting Thielen to play in that. And that will make Jefferson, he's always a must-start guy, but truly locked in as a top 3 to 5 wide receiver, and gets KJ Osborne as at least a decent enough streaming option with 4 more bye weeks ahead of us. Final game before we get out of here. Steelers took down the Ravens 20-19. Throwback one, man. It was good to see these two teams have a fun competitive game again. Maybe not as physical as it was 10 years ago, but that's okay. We got to look after our brains in the year 2021. Pittsburgh covered as a 4-point dog and the under cashed at 44. So Lamar took 7 sacks in this one. You know, wasn't really getting the ball out that quick. Guess what, though? Still gave us a more than solid fantasy performance with 55 rushing yards, 253 passing yards, and a touchdown to the Lizard King himself, Sammy Watkins, at the end. So it's one of those games where they went for it at two to try to win the ball game at the end. Lamar got pressured by TJ Watt. He tried to throw the ball around him to an open Mark Andrews. It went just off his fingertips. So I'm sure if Lamar completes that pass, everyone's talking about what a great final drive that was and how clutch Lamar is. Because he didn't complete the pass, we'll probably get people slandering him, calling him a running back, trying to play quarterback, because that's life in our new age cycle. And, you know, all that. I don't even know what I'm trying to say at this point. But the other
new age cycle,
news cycle, you know, the new age news cycle, whatever. Okay, gotcha. Anyway, yeah. With these Baltimore receivers, the one real disappointing thing to see was Rashad Bateman really not used at all. On that last drive, he did get a false start penalty, but he wasn't even out there. I mean, they just pretty much featured him behind everyone in this one, just a single target. Marquise Brown had 7, caught 5 of them for 55 yards. Mark Andrews had 9. Devontae Freeman had 8. Sammy Watkins had 6. This is incredibly concerning, everyone. We fully expected Bateman to beat out Sammy Watkins by this point in the year. We were saying that the question, and I think the false assumption by many, was that he would beat out Marquise Brown, but getting by Watkins, I thought, would make more than enough sense by this point. That is not how it has come to fruition. So Bateman, you cannot start him until we see this usage turn around. I'm not saying he's going to be useless for the rest of the year. He's too good to probably do that, but it's just like a couple weeks ago. I don't think this is injury reduced, but it's like when Cole Beasley had those 9 snaps. Like, we just cannot live with this role Bateman has right now. You can need to find someone else to play until we can see any sort of certainty that he's going to be back inside this offense's top 3 pass game options. But yeah, the good news was Devontae Freeman continues to really pull away from Latavius Murray. Dwayne, I was a little worried, not worried, but coming into this game, because the first week Latavius was back, Devontae really dominated. Last week, it was a little more 50-50 with Freeman still being the lead guy. But this week, man, 19 touches for Devontae Freeman, and he looked good doing so. I mean, how dominant were Freeman's kind of beyond the box score metrics?
Yeah, no, he looked good. I mean, 7% of his carries went for 10 yards or more. He was only stuffed on 7%, but it was just more about like consistency, right? From play to play. But he seems more decisive at this point. Yeah. And he's just, you know, like, he can still dance and do some of the things that we know Devonta Freeman can do. He still has, you know, a decent jump cuts, like not like what it used to be, you know, in Atlanta back in the Kyle Shanahan days. But this is the best game I've seen from him for sure, you know, just watching it. But he was out there for 69% of the snaps by far. Nice. Like, basically, he's the lead back now. 64% of the rushing attempts, 100% of the short down and distance, 63% of the long down and distance, 100% of the 2-minute offense. Out there nearly 60% of the time they drop back to pass. I mean, that's, you know, if the Ravens offense, you know, can keep going and he keeps getting that, I mean, he's going to be a high-end RB2 moving forward just on that type of utilization. So Freeman, he probably will be the biggest upgrade this week in the utilization report, you know, just based on the last 3 weeks. He had been, like you mentioned, really good, firm hold of at least half. And then to see him do what he did today, you know, he just kind of took a step forward and he's looking good doing it. As far as the rest of the Ravens, nothing really new. You hit on the Bateman thing. Only 39% of the time was he in a route.
Gross.
When our buddy Lamar Jackson dropped back to pass. So that's a situation, to your point, just going to have to avoid it. At this, I would just call Bateman a wide receiver 5 stash. You know, I can't even call him a wide receiver 4 boom bust right now, because we just don't know what's going to happen. I think this offense is pretty clear cut though for you now. You can use Marquise Brown, you can use Mark Andrews, you can use Devonta Freeman, and you're going to play Lamar Jackson, and that's it. It's a pretty straightforward offense. As far as the Steelers go, we saw Najee Harris get back to his typical role, 97% of the snaps, 81% of the rushing attempts, 100%, 100%, 100% across short down distance, long down distance, 2-minute offense, 17% target share, 26% targets per route run. So Najee having truly one of his busier days that we've seen from him over the last 5 to 6 games, 21 carries, 71 yards, 5 receptions on 5 targets, 4, 36 yards. So again, not the most efficient day, but lots and lots of volume continued to come Najee Harris's way. And we really saw the Steelers utilize more 2 tight ends today. You saw Freiermuth out there for 75% of the snaps, and you saw Zach Gentry out there for 49% of the snaps. And so you saw Chase Claypool really take a dip today, 67% of the routes. So coming into this game, he did have a full practice on Friday, but he's still dealing with that toe injury, Ian. So between the 12 personnel And then with having James Washington also rotating a little bit with him, it's one of the more concerning lines we've seen, you know, from Claypool. I'm not going to freak out. 10% of the targets today. He could have had, you know, he could have had a little bit of a better day. Targets per route run, though, 14% for McLeod, 15% for him, and then 7% for James Washington. Obviously, the star of the show, as he is every week, because he can beat man, he can beat zone, he can do whatever you want. His name is Deonte Johnson, and he and Ben Roethlisberger love one another. 38% target share, 48% of the air yards. That came out to 11 targets, 8 receptions, 105 yards, and 2 touchdowns. So, Ian, I had to, in 3 of my FFPC playoff teams, I had Jalen Hurts. And, man, like the waiver wire is decimated. I had Cam Newton as the backup. Oh. Well, he's on bye. So I actually had to go figure out who to drop. And guess who I had to pick up? Ben Roethlisberger.
Okay.
On all 3 of these teams. He came through, man. Let's with go. 21 points on 2 of them. I had him stacked with Deonte. Deonte was already on the team. So you know what, Ben? You came through. We make fun of you. Mostly it's just George, our boss. Ian and I, we're not even, well, Ian does kind of because you haven't been on the show. If you came on the show, Ian wouldn't make fun of you anymore, Ben. But so I appreciate you for, you know, for doing that. Coming through, probably all 3 of those teams are going to win.
Deontay's day and Ben's day could have been even bigger because I think you probably all saw it. Deonte dropped a beautiful 35-yard score down the middle. I mean, Ben put this thing on a platter for Deonte to catch. One of the only times I can say that all season. This was truly a great deep ball, and Deonte dropped it. But he came back and had, like Dwayne said, 8 catches, 105 yards, and 2 touchdowns. The guy has literally not finished as worse than the wide receiver 24 since week 1. The floor is the ceiling, and the ceiling is the roof for Deonte Johnson. And I hope that you guys have him everywhere in fantasy because I can just say, and I know Dwayne can test this too. It is a great time watching Deonte week after week put up all those numbers. Think that's about it. Only note, so one of the things Harbaugh said at the end, I like the decision to go for 2 in the first place, but one point he brought up was because just how banged up their cornerback room is, and unfortunately they have lost Marlon Humphrey seemingly for the season with a shoulder injury. So yeah, people, you saw how Ben Roethlisberger looked against this secondary. He really hasn't looked like that all year. So let's go ahead and get in the habit of playing wide receivers and quarterbacks against the Ravens down this stretch because they are not in a position to do much about it. And as I say that, I remember that they're playing the Browns next week. So let's hold that thought for 2 more weeks, and then we'll really start attacking this Ravens secondary. Thank you, as always, Aaron, for tuning in here. And I just want to note that today is actually the last day that you can get 40% off any PFF subscription if you use code CYBER40. You can get all of our locked article content, our player rankings, NFL and college football betting dashboards, our player prop tool, and much more. So again, support the podcast. Go get a subscription that will help you be a smarter and better fantasy real-life football fan alike. Promo code CYBER40 for 40% off any sub. Also, DraftKings football fans, I'm sure we all love an action-packed, high-scoring NFL game, but with the latest no-brainer from DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, you'll be a winner once a single point is scored. New customers who bet just $1 on any team to score can win $100 in free bets. It's that simple. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code PFF, bet $1 on any team to score, and win $100 in free bets. If they score, you score. Promo code PFF this week at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or older. New Jersey, Indiana, Pennsylvania only. New customers only. Minimum $5 deposit, $1 wager, 1 per customer. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook with details. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. And as always, we invite you to go submit any cool questions you might have for Chris Collinsworth, you know, in regards to his playing days, working with Al Michaels on Sunday Night Football. Maybe a need to know about your financial future. You can submit those questions at westernsouthern.com/askchris and hear those answers on the Chris Collinsworth podcast and over at Western Southern's Instagram every single week. One more time, that is westernsouthern.com/askchris. If you're watching on YouTube, check out the link in the description below. Remember, Western Southern, you can rest assured on game day. And shout out Manscaped. We have a good deal for everyone right along the holiday season. You can go to manscaped.com and use code PFF for 20% off and free shipping. Tis the season to load up on Manscaped products. So get yourself, your dad, your brother, and friends the best gift of all, the Manscaped Performance Package 4.0. You'll find the signature lawnmower. This electric trimmer has proprietary advanced skin safe technology, so you don't cut your nuts. That sounds good to me. Sounds terribly painful. I'm not trying to do that. That's what the Performance Package 4.0 can do for you with Manscaped. So again, you can get 20% off and free shipping with the code PFF at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use code PFF. Dwayne, it's week 13. We're going to do this again in week 14, 15, and 16. And we're not going to do it after week 17, because if you psychos are playing in a fantasy championship in week 18, that's your fault. And I'm not going to, you know, do this for that, because that is your fault. So maybe I'll change my tune on that. But that sounds pretty good to you, right, Dwayne? We got three more weeks of this. That's
sounds
fair.
Good to me.
Come on. Yep. It's week 18. Like, that's why I don't give kicker analysis. It's your fault. Exactly. I'm not going to help you do something that you shouldn't be doing.
We did just get word on Adam Thielen. It sounds like it's a high ankle sprain.
We talked about that, so you weren't listening to me.
No, I heard you on the ankle sprain, but it is a high ankle sprain. So did I miss that part too?
It's okay. Either way, we kind of get delirious after talking. For like
I heard ankle sprain, but not high.
Okay.
So maybe this was only 14 minutes ago from Adam Schefter.
Maybe you're the high one.
Maybe your inside sources like already tipped you off. I'll go back and listen to the tape. The tape doesn't lie.
Someone's high here. That's all I know. Dwayne and I will be back on Tuesday as usual with our waiver wire review. On Wednesday, we'll be breaking down every single game ahead of week 14. On Thursday, I'm going to have a very special guest, Matt Kelly, the podfather himself, Roto Underworld player profiler. You know the guy. I plan on doing a great episode with him. We'll be back Friday with some DFS goodness, myself and Andrew Erickson. And then myself, Dwayne, and Andrew break down all the injuries on Friday night. And you can find that Saturday morning at the latest, wherever you listen to your podcast. So for Dwayne, I'm Ian. Thank you as always for tuning in to PFF Fantasy Football Podcast. And until next time, take care, everybody.